Welcome to Trine Days, The Journey, Conversations with publisher Chris Milligan. I am Bruce DeTauris. With us is John Brady, a licensed forensic psychologist, true crime writer, doctor of criminology, and celebrity analyst. His upcoming book is Psychological DNA, a cold case analysis of who killed Robert F. Kennedy, being released June 5th, 2024. Using modern criminological methods, and new psychological assessment tools not available 5 decades ago, Dr. Brady has reassessed Sirhan's mental state and has arrived at 5 mental conditions that, in his opinion, if presented at trial, could have changed the jury's verdict and spared Sirhan 5.5 decades in prison. And now, Chris Milligan.
Bruce, thank you very much. And John, thank you very much for coming on with us here. I'm excited about your book. I just talked with the editor the other day and asked him if he learned some things. And he said, yeah, he learned quite a bit, and he enjoyed it. But I want to talk a little bit about some of your other books that you've done, one with a great name called Kleptobismol, Big Pharma Shoplifting and Psychiatric Deception. How did you get onto that subject?
In my practice in Silicon Valley, I was referred many shoplifters. A lot of these people were wealthy, to-do people who, for some psychological reason, began to steal things. One lady with a net worth of $10 million was caught stealing pantyhose from Safeway at 4 o'clock in the morning. Obviously, this wasn't a crime of material gain. It was a crime based on the fact that she had some other unmet psychological needs that were driving her to this position. So I began to look at these people, and the one commonality was that they were prescribed psychiatric drugs because they had visited medical practitioners who really didn't understand the psychodynamics of shoplifting. They just presumed that by using a particular drug, whether it was for depression or for anxiety, that it would stop the shoplifting. Actually, it was a paradoxical effect because the more they used the drugs, the more they stole.
Wow. I mean, I keep seeing figures that, you know, there's a large percentage of our population on a bunch of these psychiatric drugs. Do you know any particular figures on that?
If the United States is 4% of the world's population, we consume 60% of all medications. Of those medications, 50% of those are psychoactive drugs used to treat anxiety and other conditions. So the preponderance of prescription drug use throughout the world is basically done in the United States. What I also found what was kind of interesting is that many of the shoplifters and thieves that were referred to me for various criminal charges had been in state institutions. In state institutions, the availability of psychoactive drugs was more prevalent than it was on the street. So one woman told me that she could get speed type drugs more frequently in the hospital or in the prison in California than she could when she was in San Jose, California. The amazing thing is that in the correctional institution of the United States, these states spend $9 billion on psychiatric drugs to try and manage and control inmate populations.
Well, you know, it almost seems like we're kind of inmates here, just living in the country too. You know, I mean, you know, I'll watch some television, and Lord have mercy, if a lot of, commercial television, a lot of news and whatnot is all sponsored by the drug companies, you know, And I'll see these darn things on there. And half the time you don't even know what they're for, and the side effects, take longer to talk about them than what the drugs are for. I look at some of these drug ads too, and it seems to me that they're doing psychological warfare kind of in these ads too. And so I just, find it just very, very interesting that, we're getting prescribed all these drugs here in this country. Do all these prescriptions do any good?
Well, I think that some of the patients that I've treated over the years, in the short run, if somebody's having a severe or acute reaction to some condition, it may temporarily help the person. In the long run, as I said before, it may precipitate certain unwanted behaviors such as crime. So many of the mass shootings that we've seen throughout the country, the preponderance of those people, of the shooters, were prescribed some form of psychiatric medications, whether it was anti-anxiety, whether it was a SSRI for depression, or another drug. They were prescribed these particular drugs in order to modify their behavior. But again, the paradoxical effect is that it may have affected their self-controls and ability to not commit crimes. And we see, as I said before, a lot of the mass shooters were prescribed certain kinds of drugs.
I could talk about all of that stuff for days, but let's get into psychological DNA, the cold case analysis of who killed Robert F. Kennedy. Now, the name of this podcast is A Journey. So how did you get looking at the RFK assassination?
When I was a graduate student at Berkeley, my major professor, Bernard Diamond, was the chief psychiatrist for the defense case on Sirhan. So my interest was piqued at that particular time because Dr. Diamond would commute between Berkeley and Los Angeles, where he was testifying. And when he came back, he would conduct seminars concerning what the defense was, what the strategies were by the legal team and the psychiatric team. So I was introduced to the case fairly early, probably more than any other researcher in 55 years that's looked at the case. My interest was kind of percolated recently when there were a number of articles concerning whether or not Sirhan actually committed this particular crime. My focus was on the psychological aspects of Sirhan's personality. And what I discovered is that at trial, he had 10 doctors that had analyzed him, including Dr. Diamond. There was no unanimity as to what the diagnosis was. So they conveniently tried to label him as being paranoid schizophrenic, although later it was established he had none of the psychiatric symptoms that I'd seen when I worked in hospitals that were associated with a paranoid schizophrenic. Therefore, I thought maybe there's something that was missed here. So I went back and engaged in a tedious task. Maybe your editor can verify this. It's a long research into what was said at the trial, what the doctor's diagnoses were at the time, and why the case was mishandled in terms of coming up with a true diagnosis. In that discovery, I found five different conditions that weren't diagnosed at the trial. Explaining the conditions, I refer to a statement that I made, which is, if I told you a story of a man that had two personalities, two distinct personalities, one pretty good and one pretty bad. The bad one committed a murder unbeknownst to the good personality. If I told you that story, you probably wouldn't believe it, but that's what I found in re-diagnosing Sirhan's mental state, that he early in life had formed a separate personality to preserve himself from the trauma he experienced when he was in Palestine. As a matter of fact, the conditions that he lived under in Palestine were very similar to what's happening now in Gaza, where there were murders, where there was mayhem. So it dramatically affected his behavior, and he created this second dissociative personality type that became the evil Sirhan, as opposed to the benevolent or ordinary Sirhan. So this is more explanatory in terms of understanding his course of behavior and why to this day, even to Robert Kennedy Jr. that interviewed him, Sirhan continues to allege that he can't remember exactly what happened at the scene when he pulled the trigger and fired 8 bullets at Robert Kennedy.
Right. Well, a person with this type of dissociated disorder. Now, did he just do it on himself, or do you think that he was used and abused by other forces?
I think that this was kind of a self-created assassin, where he initially had great respect for Robert Kennedy, and this leads to a second psychological condition, which is called erotomania. And erotomania is a condition where people satellize or they connect with somebody, a significant person in their life, either in real time or vicariously, and attribute a lot of positive regard to those people. Sirhan was a person who connected to President Kennedy, and when President Kennedy died, he transferred his positive feelings to RFK as kind of a surrogate. So he had this love relationship with Kennedy, which is an earmark of the erotomania disorder. At some point, when Kennedy said he was going to support Israel in the war against Palestine, Sirhan changed his attitude into this erotomania motivated murder concept, and he saw him as an enemy rather than as an ally or somebody who he looked up to. He made many statements during his interviewing and during testimony and with the doctors that he actually loved Kennedy. When he saw Kennedy for the first time, it was as if there was a halo around his head and construed him in this beatific vision. Suddenly, when Kennedy turned against him, Sirhan then developed this negative attitude towards him, seeing him as an enemy like all the other enemies, like the British during the time he was in Palestine, like the Israelis, like other people in his life where he attributed his failure to. All of this accumulates in his second personality, spurned by the erotomania switch in from love to hate. And this formed the context of him wanting to kill RFK.
Now, he was involved a bit with theosophy and there's people talk about he was doing self hypnosis too. What
Yes.
do you know about that, and how did
There's a whole section in the book. At some level, Sirhan realized that there was something missing in his life, or there was something psychologically imbalanced in his life, although he really didn't want to acknowledge that. For the Palestinian personality, it's a cardinal sin to admit that you have a mental illness or this kind of a weakness. So Sirhan was on a discovery journey or a search to find out who he was, the meaning of self in his life. in doing this, he turned to reading. He read many, many books, self-help books. He did get into the area of theosophy. He turned to the Rosicrucians, which he thought would help him. So this turn to the occult side, in my view, was really a search to figure out who he was, because he had all along he had this troubling feeling that something was wrong with his own mental makeup, and he suspected that maybe there was an alternate personality, but he couldn't understand it. So he used these occult measures to try and figure out who he was.
Ah.
Unsuccessfully, by the way.
So, in the kitchen area there, he shot some guns, but there was, a lot of people that say there was way more bullets that were fired than were available in his gun.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's probably true. I mean, there is an overwhelming amount of evidence, ballistics evidence from the coroner, Thomas Noguchi, from eyewitnesses, from bystanders, from one of the people that was probably shot first, Paul Sherrod, stated that he didn't think that Sirhan fired the fatal bullet. The fatal bullet came from in the occipital area in the back of the head, whereas Sirhan was in a frontal position shooting 8 shots in front of Kennedy. So there's a possibility that there was a second shooter, and Robert Kennedy Jr. thinks it was the security guard.
Yes, that's generally the consensus of people that have looked into it. So, this brings me to what was Sirhan's role in this? Because he didn't have the capacity to say, "Hey, I want another shooter in there to make sure that RFK dies." And then we have the whole the girl in the polka dot
Yes,
dress
sure.
and all of this, and you have a a long history of people using, DID people, disassociated people, to accomplish things. And, when I look at intelligence, in intelligence, a lot of times, I mean, you'll have people, they're sitting in their chairs in the office, okay, and they've got, double and triple and quadruple agents out there that don't know, half the time they don't even know who they're working for and what they're doing. And so they get a lot of work done by moving these things around, okay, and getting them to do certain things. An intelligence agency could use a quote unquote damaged person like Sirhan in a assassination plot.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. The idea of the Manchurian candidate with Sirhan, he told his psychologist in San Quentin that this idea was implanted by his defense doctors, that they were reaching and trying to explain why he did this, and they suggested to him that maybe he was set up by external forces as a hypno-programmed killer. That's possible also. My theory is that the second personality plus the other four conditions that I discovered really are attributable to why this person became a killer, whether he was programmed or influenced by other people. Anything is possible. Given the kind of context that you're talking about with MK Ultra, with the CIA, with those kinds of studies that I'm very familiar with. With Sirhan, I think it started much earlier, back when he was about age 12, when this new reservoir of anger started to develop. He couldn't understand it. When he saw this, and he experienced some very bad traumas that are similar to PTSD kinds of traumas that I saw with patients when I worked at the VA hospital in San Francisco. So we had this reservoir starting to form this disassociative personality that throughout his life, up until the time that he killed Kennedy, he was involved in a situation where he had to reconcile whether or not he was going to do this or not going to do this. But the forces, he was kind of forced into this because of Kennedy's radical switch to the Israelis. That kind of pushed him over the edge. Now, whether he was influenced by an outside agency, I don't have any evidence of that, but it's certainly a possibility.
Right. I've been looking at the subject I call CIA drugs, and you've got the
Sure.
importation of narcotics, and then you've got what I call the dark side, which is the MK Ultra and all of that. And it goes back, I found, much further than the CIA. And one thing that they look for, people that are damaged, okay? Maybe they need a father figure or something like that. They look at people that they can use this damage to help influence them. So
Sure.
now you have looked, and in the book you give some studies of other people that have been in these situations.
If you look at one of the subcategories of this erotomania motivated murder is the notion of the pathological fusion. Pathological fusion as a subcategory applies to persons like Mark David Chapman, for example, that killed John Lennon. Mark David Chapman was an aficionado of Lennon's. He loved Lennon. He emulated his life after him. He married a Japanese woman. He had a rock band when he was in Hawaii. He was completely satellized with John Lennon, but on the other hand, he was also a devout Christian. And when Lennon made the statement that the Beatles were more important to the world than Jesus, and that Christianity was only a passing phenomenon, that the Beatles would triumph, something happened in Chapman's mind. By the way, he may also have had a disassociated state of awareness when he went into this trance-like state as he shot John Lennon going into the Dakota apartment building where he lived with Yoko Ono. So he is representative of this pathological fusion where your identity becomes subsumed into another person and you project yourself as that person. He signed his name as Lennon. He became his entire identity until that flashpoint when Lennon made himself more important than Christianity and Jesus. Something in Chapman snapped at that particular point. Perhaps his dissociative second personality took control and led to his assassinating Lennon. But that's just one of the categories and one of the ways to try and explain Sirhan's behavior and how he got to this point that he became a self, in my view, a self-appointed hypno-programmed assassin based on his spiritual and Rosicrucian studies where he would go into these trances. Dr. Diamond at Berkeley would discuss these situations with his graduate students that something was happening. He couldn't quite figure out what it was, even though he alluded to the fact that in addition to paranoid schizophrenia, there was also a disassociated state that he had diagnosed Sirhan with.
You talked earlier about mass shooters, and now there was a thing in 1966 in Austin. What Charles Whitman, I believe, was one of the first big mass shooters out there. And I mean,
That's right.
you know, I mean, and now, I mean, they seem to be happening quite a bit. I mean, I think it's a little bit more than just news reporting.
With Whitman on a post-mortem diagnosis, they did find a lesion, I believe, in his limbic area that controls impulses. When they did the frozen slides of his brain, there was some speculation that this was responsible for his behavior. Nothing in his background really suggested, like Sirhan, like Mark David Chapman, like other assassins, that he had this reservoir of angst against society. So they tried to attribute his behavior of killing those people from the tower to an organic disorder, which is also a possibility. The organicity part of it is pretty interesting because that can also be triggered by psychotropic drugs. And that's what we see more currently with the mass shooters. 9 out of 10 of them have been prescribed some particular drug.
Wow. Bruce, do you have any questions or comments here?
Yeah, I can't wait to read your book. It's coming out in June because the light obviously is going to shine on Sirhan's susceptibility to hypnosis, which would go a huge way to explaining how that poor guy ended up there. And you're doing a great job of letting the other evidence and reports that Chris has alluded to, even that, you know, the evidence that he was possibly firing blanks because there were other lethal shooters there. But to this very specific question, to what extent was he captured as a patsy by plotters to kill Kennedy?
In my research, there's no evidence that he was sequestered into a Navy hospital or that there was a time lapse prior to the assassination where he disappeared and something happened to him. I think during that time frame that a lot of his time was spent at the Pasadena Public Library. And I think during those times, he had drifted into this disassociated state and started to create these negative impulses. I don't see him as being directed by external agencies that forced him to do this. I think, as I said before, and I told Chris, this started when he was age 12, not a more recent thing. Even though it was clear to a lot of people that he was kind of damaged goods, so I agree with you, but I think that his motivational patterning was directed into the second personality. As a matter of fact, when it's my opinion, and I express it in the book, that when Robert Kennedy Jr. interviewed him, I don't think he really interviewed the person that killed his father. I think he interviewed the ordinary, undifferentiated Sirhan, who was a compliant, nice, pleasant individual. So in a sense, Robert Kennedy Jr. was right. The personality he talked to didn't assassinate his father. It was a separate personality, and that personality wasn't manifested during that interview.
I consider your account a fluid one because I wonder, John, what you would think and feel if you took the time to read Lisa Peace's A Lie Too Big to Fail, which is a huge book about all the evidence about who else was there in the pantry. But also that's the account of Sirhan's behavior to the best that she could find it researched, and the folks who may have played a hand in manipulating him, brainwashing him. It really goes a long way to proving to many, including myself, that he didn't fire live rounds that night.
Yeah, I think that the theory that Robert Kennedy had concerning Thane Cesar has some credibility. And I'm not discounting the fact that there could have been a second shooter or a conspiracy or a plot against Kennedy, because he, even though he was popular, he made a lot of enemies. That's pretty obvious. My focus is purely on the psyche, as a forensic psychologist, is purely on the psychiatric components of what creates a self-programmed assassin. And I can lay out in the book with these five different conditions where he became kind of a self-described Manchurian candidate, self-motivated Manchurian candidate based on the Rosicrucian information and all of his occult studies that were deposited into the second personality.
Thank you. I'm really looking forward to your book.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Bruce, for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Yes, and one thing that we find once we look behind the curtain, we find that the occult is one of the areas where, I talk about the secret societal system, but occult is one of the areas that is very familiar with these people, and it works up with intelligence agencies and all of these. So there would be a place in the occult where they could have found out about what Sirhan was doing, and then roll him into their plans. Because again, because when you look at these really hard, you see that they search out and even help create damaged people with some of the pedophilic activity, which causes big psychological problems on the person that it's being done to. It's a very good book. I mean, it is a deep one of the deepest dives I've seen into Sirhan's personality, but he just doesn't go there. He also looks at quite a few other people and really gives a really long shrift on this subject. Is there any last comments or something that you would like to talk about that we didn't bring up?
No, you did it. You both of you did a very good job. I'm trying to put together a comparison of the criminogenic factors that drove both Oswald and Sirhan. And I'm finding that through my research, and particularly with Sirhan, that there's a lot of commonalities concerning their backgrounds, what happened to them, and how they became assassins. So that's currently what I'm working on, are the psychological characteristics specific to these two men. And I'm finding that there's more commonality than dissimilarity between their two personalities. So that's a kind of a separate issue. The last thing is that, as you well know, as a student of this subject, it's very difficult to separate the dynamics of one case from another. So if you look at Sirhan, it leads you inevitably into a search for who was Lee Harvey Oswald, and why did he assassinate JFK?
Well, he didn't assassinate him. He was a patsy. He was put in there in a game. And again, he needed a father figure. Okay.
That's right.
And they really,
That's exactly right.
that's one of the first things that they look for is for somebody who needs a father figure, because when he was in New York City, visited people that were heavily involved with MK Ultra psychiatrists there.
Well,
And
when he was 12, when he was at the youth center in New York, I mean, I have a report by Dr. Hartog. This was given to the commission in 1964, his presentation, and he outlines clearly that even at age 12, that Oswald appeared to have a dangerous streak in him. Not only was he oppositionally defiant, but he also was kind of psychopathic. So what I'm trying to do is trace back into his history and to factor in these issues concerning his childhood and what happened to him. But it's very definitive in this doctor's report, plus the probation officer's report and the psychologist that tested him at the time. The only psychological testing that we have on Oswald was the Hartog's report, a probation report, a psychologist report, and then his testing when he entered the Marine Corps in 1956. There's a complete AGCT, Army General Classification Test, that came up with some psychological, not issues, but some psychological data concerning where his placement would be when he was in the Marine Corps. So the two cases kind of parallel each other. And what I want to do is fill in the blanks to determine what similarities they had, what criminal similarities they had that led to them at least shooting at a target. Well, I mean, I agree with you. Maybe there was a conspiracy with Kennedy, but nevertheless, I feel that Oswald did do something. He did shoot a gun, but how did he get to that situation? I'm more interested in the psychological composition of these two assassins rather than the mechanics of outside influences.
Right. Well, again, I Oswald was a patsy, and he knew that because, you know, again, at that in Japan at Asugi, however you say that, it was one of the places where they were doing some LSD experiments. And very interesting, when he was in New Orleans, that was one of the, he was studying up on LSD in 1963 in New Orleans in the library. There was knowledge of him, because that's one thing that you would do in MK Ultra. You keep track of people, okay? People that are going to be useful and stuff like that. And so there's quite a bit of information that there was a quote unquote Oswald project, because again, I trace the assassination of JFK, where they're setting it up. Some of it goes to the 1930s, and actually some of the motivation goes back quite a ways, because the Pope issued a bull against the Knights Templar on 1122. And so there's a lot of stuff to unpack around the Kennedy assassination. Okay. So I want to thank you very, very much for coming on. And the book is called Psychological DNA, A Cold Case Analysis of Who Killed Robert F. Kennedy. And it's coming out this June.
Oh, thanks to you. I really appreciate your confidence and support of the book.
Well, you know, everybody brings something to the table, okay? Everybody, you know, and what we're trying to do is we're trying to understand the perfidy that we found ourselves in, you know, and have a better future for our children.
That's right. Well, at least I found the table.
John, I'm proud to assert that there's no better than Chris, and hopefully me with some help, to tell you that the preponderance of evidence, this is me, not Chris talking, obviously, but and also the credibility of those claiming it, is that Lee Harvey Oswald didn't fire a weapon that day. And I wouldn't be your friend and colleague in truth seeking if I didn't tell you that to ponder.
No, I'm going to. I mean, that's very interesting, but it still begs the question of what is this guy's psychological composition? How did he get there, and why does he share so many criminogenic characteristics with Sirhan?
Well, he's useful. He's useful.
That's right.
Yes, indeed. Onwards to a better future.
Chris, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.